A4.
Number 11A.
We come now to Seoul, and we want to see that Seoul again gives us a quite different tone again, which cannot be compared or which does not mingle in any way with mind or spirit. Namely, that when we understand mind, which says, I am the only creator and producer and cause of everything, and spirit says, and I unfold what mind produces. I develop it, I evolve it, so that it comes out clearer and clearer. Then comes soul and says, yes, everything that is unfolded has its own true identity. Soul gives us a sense of that being has identity, meaning that it is always what it is. Identity could also be called self-sameness, that it is showing that everything has its own and the same essence. It's a selfhood, so to say. We can also see that that identity is really brought out as ego, the divine ego, because ego says, I am what I am, I'm always that what I am, I'm always my own selfhood, I'm not going to change. And so we come to changeless. Soul is changeless. It does not change. Therefore, the identity of being is always what it is. It does not change its nature. It is therefore absolutely reliable, and therefore you can see that we also speak of the safety of soul, because it only that is safe on which you can rely, because you know that it never changes. So we get the sense that because it never changes, that soul is immortal, and we have the immortality of soul. Can you see how these link into each other, just giving a sense that being has identity, meaning self-sameness, therefore never changing. We can rely on it. We find the safety in it. And finding that safety in it and unchangeability in it, we see that it is immortal. That's why even humanly, one feels that the soul is immortal. So we can see that now soul really is that, you see, which makes everything definite. We don't have that on our list. I bring in quite a lot of new terms which are not on the list, because this list is just an excerpt of some dozens and dozens of ideas. But you can see that because soul has identity, therefore soul will always define a situation, make it definite. Soul makes everything definite. There is nothing indefinite about being. Therefore, because it has identity, soul names also. Because through a name, something is identified. An idea which is very important in the Bible, because the naming in the Bible always meant the spiritual identification of an idea. So that one has that whole sense that identity names and defines, makes definite, because it is unchangeable and therefore has never any loss. There is no loss in soul, you know. Because something has identity and is unchangeable, it wipes out the sense of loss. It is always absolutely constant. And soul is that which stands against the testimony of the physical senses, therefore which identifies everything through spiritual sense. Therefore, soul only takes cognizance of the true identity and names everything through spiritual sense. That spiritual sense operates really as that which brings us away from material sense and brings us to soul. Therefore, that rendering in the textbook, from sense to soul, also a very great idea in the Bible, where that passage from sense to soul is shown all through the time of the patriarchs and Moses, so that one sees that the true identity, which can only be perceived through spiritual sense, leads away from defining everything materially, therefore taking us away from the five physical sense testimony or identification, giving us really spiritual understanding. Spiritual understanding is just a step further than the understanding of spirit, because spiritual understanding as soul is so definite that there is no question about it. It is so identified that it gives you the security and reliability of soul. And through this spiritual understanding, which understands everything spiritually, and therefore identifies everything through spiritual sense, is therefore sinless. It is not deviating from the identity of being. Sinless, you know, is the fact about sin. Sin is just missing the mark. Sin is not really seeing things as they are. Sin is therefore not being able to identify reality. Sin, therefore, is whenever we name something wrongly, cannot see the definiteness of the identities of being. All that is sin. But because soul is identity, it is sinless. So whenever we regard anything from the point of view of spiritual sense and spiritual understanding, we move in the realm of sinlessness. And because sin brings us from sense to soul, it transforms every situation from a wrong sense into a true sense. And we have soul that transforms. Really, it's that which reverses the false and brings it back to the true identity. It exchanges the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. It translates the wrong into the true, so that you get here the whole sense of reforming. Soul reforms the sinner. Can you hear now? Spirit didn't do that. Spirit made a clear-cut separation between what is right and what is wrong. And a step further than spirit is soul that says, and I take that which is wrong and lead it from sense to soul. I exchange that which is wrong for that which is true. I reform that which is wrong so that the true form, the true identity appears. Can you see that soul is just one step further than spirit? And therefore, by that exchanging, we naturally lose that sense that there is something outside, and so soul is always the great withinness. If we want to know something about soul, just think about that great withinness as that identity which contains within the capacity of soul everything that is necessary for its identity. Therefore, soul is never in anything. It is the seed within itself. That great withinness draws everything from its own infinite selfhood and lets everything appear and reappear and reappear. That's what you have in the third day of creation, because soul is never in anything. The moment we think about something big in something small, we have the counterfeit of soul. Soul always says, I have everything within myself. I'm never within anything else. Soul is never in body. Soul is never in matter. Soul is never in mortal mind. Soul is never in person, in people, in anything. It gives you, therefore, a sense of the limitlessness of soul, the boundlessness of soul. Whenever you break any limitation in consciousness, it is because soul says, I'm never in anything. And so the sense of unlimitedness, unboundedness, are ideas of soul. Because it has the seed within itself, it reproduces itself, it lets every identity reappear, so that it reproduces its identity constantly. Can you see that wonderful sense why Jesus could reproduce at the resurrection his whole body? Because he could see that identity is identity and has everything within itself, and that therefore the identity of being could never be anything but its own self-sameness. And all that consciousness is really showing the reproduction of the idea, the reappearance of the idea. That's why it is possible that an idea does not die, that an idea cannot be lost, that an idea cannot be hurt, that an idea cannot be disabled, or anything like that. Soul is untouchable. The moment you have untouchable identity, is then you have an idea of soul. And therefore we can see that the idea man is absolutely untouchable in soul. Nothing can hurt the idea man, or kill the idea man, or destroy the idea man. So that soul reproduces, which is really resurrection. Soul always resurrects us. Why? Because it always says, come out of your limitation, come out of the inness in anything, and see that the idea is absolutely spiritual, infinite, limitless, unbounded, unconfined. The moment we see that, then we will use the rule of soul. The rule of soul here, which says, all right, the greater rules the lesser. The rule of soul, which says, put off the limits. The rule of soul, which says, that the idea reproduces itself, that the identity reproduces itself. And in doing that, by bringing everything out from limitation into the unlimited, we really get the freedom of soul. We call soul the freedom of soul, because there are no restrictions. And the moment we have the freedom of soul, we have the joy of soul, the happiness of soul, the satisfaction of soul. Those three, like joy, happiness, satisfaction, we always get then when we feel that we are not restricted, when all the restrictions are put off, when all the limitations are put off. Then we have a sense of freedom. We don't run anymore against walls. We don't run anymore against opposition. We are no more cluttered in into something. But then we feel free. The moment we feel free, unhampered, we are happy. And we feel a sense of satisfaction. That's why you have the satisfaction of joy, the balance of soul. Soul rejoices in its own. Remember, soul rejoices in its own. It's that infinite withinness, which just finds its whole identity within itself. So man really would find that joy and that satisfaction and that rejoicing in its own identity, the moment he finds his own identity. It's therefore the beauty of soul that comes out, the grace of soul that is being manifested. That soul. Can you see that soul brings you something very definite, something very reliable, something very strong? The capacity of soul, which says, here everything is within the infinite withinness of identity. Nothing is lacking, and nothing changes. There is nothing limited about it. Yeah. It is like the third day. You can see that so neatly in the third day of creation, where in the symbolization of the Bible, it brings out that passage from the first to the second to the third day very nicely, where you have in the third day where it says, let the waters gather together into one place. In order to gather them into one place, you have to separate it from the other. So that, and you think, so that what appears, and you think, so that the ocean appears or the lake appears. But it says, so that the dry land appears. Showing that when thought is gathered together in the point of reflection, at the focal point of reflection in spirit, that then the true identity of things appear. I will do some of these exercises afterwards to show really that in the measure as we go from mind, where we say all our ideas, and go to spirit and say these ideas reflect each other at the focal point of spirit. Each idea reflects each other idea. That only when we see them, how they reflect each other, that the identity of the idea, the whole identity, the whole form of that idea appears. The dry land appears. The concrete, spiritual, tangible idea appears. And that's how in all our creative work, the law operates. The law operates exactly in mind, spirit, soul. It begins first to see that we have to do with ideas and with nothing else, and that mind is giving us all the ideas which we need. Then in spirit that we separate these ideas from all false conceptions, from all human conceptions. We make that separation. And the better we make that separation, we experience the dry land appearing. We experience that suddenly the eureka claim comes, I have it. It has identity. It defines itself. It names itself to us. That's mind, spirit, soul. And you see, it is a terrific, great law operating here, which leads from the tone of mind to the tone of spirit, and from there to the tone of soul, of clear, cut, defined, named identity. All right, let's go to principle and see if that brings us a completely different aspect of God. Principle is really the super symbol for all the seven synonymous terms. Whenever we like to express the seven synonymous term in one, we either can say God, or in the scientific language, we can just call it the infinite principle. You know how Mrs. Eddy explains that in that article on capitalization, that principle includes all the other synonymous terms for God. It is, so to say, the pivotal point where on one side the nature of God is explained as mind, spirit, soul, and on the other side that principle demonstrates itself as life, truth, and love. So that mind, spirit, and soul is the one wing of principle, and life, truth, and love, the other wing of principle. Combining all those synonymous terms into one. This principle governs. It's really the Lord Sabaoth, as the Bible called it, the Lord of the armies of heaven, that really rule the country and the nation. It is the idea of government that is brought out by principle. Principle governs. It's naturally a theocratical government and not a democratical government. It governs through principle, which is impersonal, and governs through its system of ideas. The agency, so to say, which the government uses is a system of ideas. And it operates that system in order to govern all situation. As it is one principle governing through one system of ideas, the outcome of that government is harmony. Harmos means that all ideas work together in a frictionless way. And actually, system and harmony have practically the same definitions. They all show that in system, as well in harmony, all the parts work together in one consistent whole, bringing out the frictionless operation of that principle. And therefore, we can see in principle that it is an ever-operative principle, ever operating its system in science, ever operating in system, and the outcome and the atmosphere of it, the hue of it, is harmony, giving a sense that this principle is constantly interpreting itself through ideas. It is not so that we have to interpret a principle, not even that we have to interpret a text. A text must be interpreted by the principle that wrote that text, and therefore within the framework of that principle. And therefore, principle interprets itself. This is naturally a terrific point, because we know very well that the whole of Christianity has gone to pieces because of interpretation. Christianity had just one textbook, the Bible, and everyone interpreted the Bible in a different way and built on that interpretation a new church and a new denomination. That's why we have hundreds and hundreds of Christian denominations, all built on the same thing, on one text, on one textbook. And this is only possible because they have never seen that the Bible must be interpreted from the standpoint of the principle of the Bible. All these denominations have interpreted the Bible from their human standpoint, from one angle. And they have fallen in love, so to say, with one angle, with one accentuation of the Bible, and then have built their church on that limited sense. Whereas the Bible, or even, and also the textbook, can only be interpreted rightly when interpreted from the science of the textbook and of the Bible. That's why science must be seen as the great interpreter of those books, Bible and the textbook.